Guess we're going in the front, then.
No way, Kane. I'll always back your play, but look at them. Walking in there would be suicide, plain and simple.
The entrance is too well guarded, Kane. We can't just sneak past them. And there are too many to just start blasting people, even if that was a reasonable option. Face it, the scavengers have won this round. Maybe we'll be able to buy the tech from them sometime later on.
Oh, ye of little faith. You're always telling us how we need to use our guns less and diplomacy more, Baptiste.
I don't see what...
Kane unclipped something from the built-in belt of his jacket. He stepped out of the tree cover and walked down the slight slope toward the mine entrance, holding aloft the small gunmetal canister with his thumb pushed tightly against its circular top.
Everybody relax.
The confused guards raised their rifles toward him.
This is what's known as a dead man switch. You all know what that means, so lower the weapons.
The two guards nodded and tentatively lowered their blasters, still clutching them in readiness. Their outfits were patched together, not uniforms as such, but uniform in their raggedness. Both had heavy fur hats pulled low to their brows, and their hands were wrapped in dirty gloves or bundled in rags.
Now, I and my friends here have some business inside. We don't plan to be long, and we don't intend to take much. But if we don't get our way, then you and I and this whole underground shaft thing you have going on are about to meet the glorious Maker and sing hallelujah.
Bridget looked annoyed as she followed Grant out from beneath the tree.
This is what he calls diplomacy?
If I'm not mistaken, he's threatening them with a flask of water, Bridget.
Grant tensed the tendons of his right wrist, and his Sin-Eater sidearm was thrust into his hand from beneath his right sleeve. The Sin-Eater was the official sidearm of the Magistrate Division, and both Grant and Kane had kept them when they had fled from Cobaltville. The Sin-Eater was an automatic hand blaster, less than 14 inches in length at full extension, firing 9mm rounds. The whole unit folded in on itself to be stored in a bulky holster just above the user's wrist. The holsters reacted to a specific flinching of the wrist tendons, powering the pistol automatically into the user's hand. If the index finger was crooked at the time, the hand blaster would begin firing automatically. The trigger had no guard. As mags, Grant and Kane were schooled in the use of numerous different weapons, but both of them still felt especially comfortable with the Sin-Eater in hand. It was an old friend, a natural weight to their movements. Just now, Kane's own Sin-Eater was still sheathed in its wrist holster beneath the white sleeve of his coat. He paced forward, holding the flask aloft and keeping the attention of the two guards as they wondered whether to leave their posts.
I want you all to step away from the entrance.
Grant leveled his Sin-Eater meaningfully at the guards, holding it for a second first on the one to the left, then tracking swiftly across and pointing it at the other guard before returning to the first one once more.
Guns in the snow, gentlemen.
Maniacs.
How many are inside?
Come on, kid. Quickly now.
8.
You got a way to speak to them?
Shouting.
No radios? No comm devices?
Only in the Scorponauts.
To communicate with home. Nothing for here.
This rang true to Kane and his team. The Millennial Consortium was not renowned for its lavish treatment of staff. Its operations were executed at minimal expense to generate maximum profits. Low-ceilinged, the tunnel dipped into a shallow slope, burrowing under the wrecked firewood and open foundations that had once formed buildings above. Kane could see a few paces into the tunnel, after which its contents were lost in darkness.
My buddies and I are going to go in. You're going to wait here, and you're not going to do anything stupid, or we will all be having the remainder of this discussion in the afterlife. Am I clear?
The guards nodded, their eyes wide in fear, but Kane didn't bother turning to them. He was busy scanning the gloom of the tunnel and listening for any hint of approaching reinforcements.
Now, if nobody does anything unwise, like trying to use a weapon, nobody'll get hurt. We'll be out of your hair before you know it.
He led the way into the tunnel. Grant held back, covering the two guards with his Sin-Eater, as Bridget followed Kane into the dark tunnel.
Sit tight, boys. We won't be here long.
With that, Grant ducked his head and jogged the few steps it took him to catch up to his colleagues. Bridget looked from Grant to Kane.
This is insane, you realize.
We're in, and nobody's been hurt so far. Score 1 for diplomacy, I think.
The pair of you seem to have mistaken diplomacy for insanity.
Whoa there. This is strictly Kane's insanity. I just follow the leader.
So you plan to bluff your way inside, and then what?
I'll insist they all leave, or I'll set off the bomb.
What bomb? You're holding a flask.
They don't need to know that.
I'd say it's preferable if they don't know it.
If they're scared by the loco bomber, then they all wait outside at a safe distance, and we get the place to ourselves. You find what you need, then we head back to Lakesh and Cerberus.
Brilliant. And what, pray tell, is your plan for getting out again? With maybe 15 armed and now very much antagonized millennialists waiting for us at the end of a bottleneck.
This used to be a military base, right, Baptiste? We'll use their Matrans. Simple, and yet genius.
The Matrans chamber was found in many of the pre-nuke-cost military bases and offered a quick way to move from one to the other by the almost instantaneous transfer of particles. Having been originally constructed as a military installation, the Cerberus Redoubt, the headquarters of Kane's field team, had a Matrans chamber. However, they had traveled to Grand Forks via two Manta Flyers, which acted as both transatmospheric and subspace aircraft. It would be a simple matter, Kane reasoned, to collect the hidden Mantas once the heat had died down. The Cerberus exiles had a variety of ways to transport people. The Manta aircraft and the Matrans network were just two. In the past few years, they had come to rely increasingly on another form of teleportation called the Interphaser, which exploited naturally occurring centers of energy both around the world and on the moon and other planets. The Interphaser was ideal for traveling between known locations, but, like the Matrans, could be dangerous when gating into the unknown. There were other limitations on the Interphaser as well, but for the right mission, it was ideal.
Nothing can go wrong with this, can it?
Not unless he drinks the bomb by mistake.
Kane led the way along the ill-lit tunnel, assuming the role of point man. Taking point was an unconscious habit for Kane, dating back to his days as a magistrate. He exhibited an uncanny knack for sniffing out danger, a sixth sense in some respect, though it was really an incredible combination of the natural five he possessed, honed to an acute sharpness. Walking point, his eyes darting right and left, his hearing seeking changes in sound at an almost infinitesimal level, Kane felt electric, tuned in to his surroundings at a near zen-like level. Walking point in the danger zone, Kane felt alive. By the time they reached the concrete exterior of the base itself, even Bridget was feeling quietly confident. At the end of the shaft, a huge circular hole had been bored through the thick concrete wall of the old military base, taller than Grant and wide enough for two people abreast. Kane and Grant led the way into the interior, finding it lit by a string of dim, flickering lights that had been attached to vicious-looking hooks rammed into the ceiling. The whole system had to be running off a generator of some kind, installed specially for the Millennial Consortium operation. Large gaps between the flickering lights left sections of the corridor in complete darkness.
No expense spared.
The first thing Bridget noticed as she stepped into the underground lair was the stench of stale air. Slushy, muddy prints could be seen on the tiles beneath her feet, and there was a little mound of pale-colored powder where the hole had been drilled through the wall. She checked behind her, peering into the dark shaft they had just walked through to make sure no one had followed them.
Know where we're going, Baptiste?
Bridget had an eidetic memory, long ago more commonly known as a photographic memory, and she'd studied maps of the Grand Forks base before leaving for the mission. She pointed to the left corridor.
Computer core's a little down this way, 20 paces maybe.
As they got closer, Bridget indicated a set of double doors to one side, and Kane locked eyes with Grant, putting a finger to the side of his nose for a moment before they led the way inside. The gesture was a private code between the two X-Mags, an old tradition to do with luck and long odds. Kane quickly entered the gloomy, smoke-damaged computer room, his hand holding the gunmetal flask prominently out before him like a shield. There were three guards in the room, but none of them was watching the door as he moved through it.
Hello, gentlemen.
The three guards spun to face the intruders, reaching for their sidearms.
Freeze! Dead man switch here. That means if I'm dead, you're dead.
Two other men were in the room, and they looked up from their work at the stripped-down computer banks.
Some of you look like scientific types, so I'll put this in terms you're all familiar with. Get out of here or I will blow us all up. Any questions?
One of the guards pointed his Coleco M960 subgun at Kane.
What's to stop me offing you right now?
The other people in the room looked at the guard for a moment, horror on their faces.
Do what he says. That's a dead man switch.
He'll kill us all.
He's bluffing. I'll get his arm.
Are you nuts?
Look, we don't have time to argue about this. Make your decision now. Either get out or stay here and get blown up. Don't complicate the very simple set of options I'm giving you.
One of the white coats, a bespectacled man with thin blonde hair, stepped forward.
This is highly unusual. Our section leader would be terribly upset if we were to just leave this operation.
Grant took a step forward and grabbed the blonde scientist by his collar, ramming the nose of his sin-eater in the man's terrified face.
My partner here is holding a bomb. We don't give a crap how upset your boss is going to be.
Grant tossed the man aside. The other scientist, a man with a round face and the black hair and gold skin of an Asian, faced his colleagues.
There's only three of them. How much can they take? This isn't worth getting blown up over.
Smart man. All of you can get out of here now, and you have my word that we won't shoot you in the back or anything like that.
Warily, the guards and scientists made their way from the room. Grant followed them, the sin-eater poised in his hand.
Keep going through the tunnel to the outside.
Grant watched them leave, walking down the corridor with heavy heads. Inside the computer room, Kane was clipping the flask to his belt.
You know, Baptiste, I could get used to this diplomacy thing.